DW.
Let me take you down.
When Rolling Stone issue 1 hit the newsstands in November 1967, complete with a John Lennon picture on its front cover, nobody could have known that it would still be going strong 5 decades later.
I've been involved in various bands and various groups of kinds, and a lot of them, most of them, fail. And not because anyone's done anything wrong, just because wrong time, wrong place, something. Rolling Stone hit immediately.
The publication's first managing editor was Michael Lydon, whose journey to that role took some time and involved crossing the globe.
Well, it really began when I was in college and I was writing a column for the newspaper, and I wrote about the Beatles when the Beatles came to America, and I said, the Beatles are terrible, Martha and the Vandellas and Motown, that's where it's at. But I quickly learned the error of my ways.
After graduating from college, Michael went to work for Newsweek magazine and was soon assigned to London.
So I was in London when Rubber Soul came out. I interviewed John and Paul, which was really very exciting. Newsweek transferred me to San Francisco, which was like going from the frying pan into the fire. The Grateful Dead, the Jefferson Airplane, all that stuff was happening. I got there in January 1967. And there was The Human Being, which was the first of the sort of the big hippie gatherings. And then in June, there was the Monterey Pop Festival. And that was another sort of big hippie gathering. And all the music, Jimi Hendrix, The Who, Janis Joplin, where rock and roll was going, was on display at the Monterey Pop Festival.
And it was at Monterey where Michael first met Jan Wenner, the creator of Rolling Stone, who later invited him to get involved with the new magazine.
Jan Wenner was an amazing human being, a driven, dynamic, resourceful, powerful personality. And he saw that this new generation that we were just describing of the hippies and LSD and long hair and bell-bottom pants and paisley shirts and all that, that was a new audience. The magazines that college kids and kids in their 20s read, like Esquire magazine in particular, that was all about fine brands of scotch and tweed jackets and khaki pants and button-down shirts. And that had been the model setters for kids like me. But all of a sudden now, the long-haired hippie look was the look. And Esquire was out of date, and they didn't know how to find the audience.
And so that's what Rolling Stone aimed to do right from the outset.
I had been looking for something like this. We were just like today when like-minded kids graduate from college and hey, let's start a website. You know, let's invent an app. It was very much like that. There were a group of young people, you know, in their 20s, early 30s at the oldest, who wanted to do something. We all wanted to be the fifth Beatle. That's what we would say. We wanted to be, in a certain way, you could say, Jan Wenner founded Rolling Stone so that he could meet John Lennon. You couldn't just be a fan on the street. You had to do something. You had to do something as exciting.
The first issue of Rolling Stone magazine came off the presses in late October 1967 and featured reviews on albums by Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton, photos and articles on the Grateful Dead following a recent drugs bust, an attack by Ralph J. Gleason on TV networks for not devoting more time to artists of colour, and a front-page report by Lydon himself on financial irregularities at a recent charity event.
Each one of us in a few seconds had a copy in our hand. Volume 1, number 1, Rolling Stone. November 9, 1967. Then we all sort of cheered and went home tired but happy. But then we're back the next night writing the headlines for issue number 2.
So how many were printed of that first issue?
Quite a few. I think in the order of 40,000 or so. And I remember thinking, how is he ever going to get rid of 40,000 magazines? But he did.
And it wasn't just about celebrating music and musicians, was it? It had all those other articles in there, like politics and investigative journalism. That's quite an amazing thing to get into one publication, isn't it, really?
Jan liked writing. That was one of the strengths of it. He wanted good writing. So the articles that today fill Rolling Stone of politics and investigative reporting, in a way, began with that.
So tell us what the immediate impact was then. How long was it before you were getting a reaction that you thought, oh, God, this is it. This is actually a pretty important moment.
One of the first letters we got was from a kid in Iowa. And he was saying, I'm stuck here in Iowa and I want to be part of what's happening, but what can I do about it? And then I found you guys and I thought, you're my lifeline. You're the newspaper that's going to connect me to this whole movement, the spirit of the time. It was just the right vibration for the right time. That's what Rolling Stone was like.
Capturing the spirit of the time even went as far as advertising a Roach clip in the magazine.
Ralph Gleason, who was the older, the sort of the statesman of the bit, he was furious. You can't do that. You can't encourage pot use. But in fact, everybody was smoking pot. And to be able to make a joke of it, to make a little promotional gift of a Roach clip if you bought a subscription, that resonated at the time. That was fun. That was a good idea. So Jan had a sense of where the whole hippie and the whole music business was going.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice when she's 10 feet.
It was a mind-expanding time, and many minds were being expanded and liked it and then conversed with each other. So it was not a niche market kind of thing. Music was the core. That was the thing that brought everybody together. Everybody loved the Beatles when the White Album came out, and then Sgt. Pepper. No one could believe it. But then Bob Dylan came out with the John Wesley Harding, so there was his very spare, country, simple, direct music compared to all the wildness of Sgt. Pepper. People were purposely thinking outside the box. I think that's where people started to use that expression.
Michael left Rolling Stone magazine just a few issues later to pursue other avenues.
I truly wanted to be a freelance writer, and there was so much interest in pop music that I figured I'll be able to make my living on my own, article by article, which did, thank goodness, did happen. The continuing most interesting thing about Rolling Stone was the Rolling Stone interview. Issue after issue, Bob Dylan, the Crosby, Stills, and Nash guys, whoever it was, we were all the fifth Beatle. We were all linked. So I liked that. And I felt the interviews were really good. If it's good, if the music of journalism truly captures life, gets what it was about, it will last. And that's what's happened with the Rolling Stone.
In recent years, the publication has suffered from negative publicity following a libel case and financial troubles. Jan Wenner and son Gus have been seeking to sell their half of the company. Michael Lydon is now a singer-songwriter who's also written several books. But 50 years on, he's still happy to be remembered for his part in the birth of Rolling Stone magazine. Ashley Byrne, DW.
DW.